Mom, I saw Dylan's dad make dinner. Like, actually cook, and it was straight fire. He said it was Blue Apron Assemble and Bake. All the ingredients showed up pre-chopped, and he just laid it out on a baking sheet, and no cap. Dinner was on the table in like 25 minutes. Apparently, it's chef-designed, and it has like over 40 grams of protein. That's a lot, right? So maybe we try it. Just saying. You can be the next Dylan's dad. Blue Apron. Get $50 off your first two orders, plus free shipping with code STIR50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
As a man, finding a truly great pair of pants can feel impossible. Some wrinkle the moment you sit down. Others look fine but don't travel well, don't move well, or completely lose their shape throughout the day. When you're flying, commuting, or packing light, most pants just aren't built for real life.
That's why there's Jack Archer. JackArcher.com makes the Jet Setter Tech Pant, designed to be the one pair of pants you actually need. Comfortable enough for travel, polished enough for work, and versatile enough for wherever the day takes you. The Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built for all-day comfort. With flexible stretch, customizable fit options, and thousands of five-star reviews, these are the pants you'll reach for every day.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order using code GETJACK at JackArcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at JackArcher.com for 15% off your first order.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Team USA gets rolling later today. Team Canada as well. It is time for the international tournament, the Olympic tournament, underway. Had games yesterday. Sweden holds off Italy, and just a little bit ago, the Swiss wrapped up a victory over France. Jeremy and Joe, good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday. It is tournament time. Joining us on the Western Hotline to talk a little bit about the U.S. program and the tournament itself, former Sabres coach. And can I go with pillar of the national program, Don Granato? Don, can I call you a pillar of the national program? You were there for quite a long time.
I was there for a long time. I'm not sure I'm comfortable with that, but okay. It's your show, so you can call it whatever you'd like.
All right, we're doing it. Pillar of the national team program, as so many of these players have come through. You know, you coached, and whether you coached them through the program, 13 while at the program, 16 of the players, and so many players, of course, like on other rosters. I know how much you love watching hockey. How much you love watching this, the best on best?
Well, I'm getting excited. I mean, yesterday's games, you see – there's such a disparity in talent. It's way different than the NHL. Obviously, a short tournament, that's going to make it way different. But the disparity in skill and talent, as you saw in the Sweden-Italy game where there are 60 shots, you know, when Sweden plays Canada-US, those shots will be, you know, those shots could be in the teens by, you know, and that might be it by the end of the game. So it's very different. I'm looking forward, like everyone else, to see when the big guys play the big guys. In the interim, you're kind of watching these games, and there's going to be an upset or two like there was yesterday with Slovak and the Finns. And those are fun to watch in a different manner.
When you're watching, you know, either an upset happening or an upset coming close, like this would be the Italy and Sweden game yesterday, are you falling for the underdog and rooting for them, or do you kind of want the team that is clearly better out there to end up getting the result?
That's a great question, Joe. I don't have an answer for you. I'm going to try to watch. You know, I watch so much hockey, and I still every day I'm watching the NHL, and it becomes such a business you're thinking about, okay, you know, sitting in that head coach chair all the time, and what would you do in practice the next day? What meeting would you hold? Who would you hold? You know, I'm trying to just decompress and watch these games for the enjoyment. So I don't have an answer for you. It is fun to take a break from the NHL and just watch this stuff happening. But you do feel, having sat in the chair of a head coach, you know, the time that goes in and the work that goes on behind the scenes, you hate to see anybody lose. But then on the other side, you do feel so. I guess you ride both sides a little bit on it, Joe.
Don Granato joining us on the West Tour Hotline. Don, you know, these tournaments, you know, you were the head coach of the national program there. These tournaments, these 2 week events, what is the, I guess, how dialed in do these guys get for this kind of thing, right? They're taking a break from their job. They're going to a foreign country, and then they're just locking in when you put the flag on. Like, how intense does preparation, meetings, all that stuff, like, as compared to like an NHL day to day?
Yeah, it's euphoric in a sense. If you think about the dynamics, these guys have been playing pretty much every other day or every third day in the NHL. They just had 5 days off. That is massive. That actually feels like 3 weeks to 4 weeks when you have that many days off, because, you know, you can recoup all of your energy, because, you know, you're playing in the NHL. You're playing, not only are you playing hurt, you're playing with, you know, you just got off a plane. You have no sleep rhythm. So again, these guys are playing, you know, 4, 5, 6 days off, 7 days off now before their first game. They have more time in between games. They're not traveling in between games, and they're in that euphoric, you know, Olympic village with all these other athletes. So this is, and they've thought about it for, you know, making this team and playing on this team. So they're going to be on a high and ride a high through the entire event, because it's short and all those dynamics. And the coaching side, you're looking for chemistry, and you're looking for it right away. So you're watching game to game, and measuring. You don't know the context, so you're measuring the other teams and pre-scouting quite a bit through the tournament. It's just a lot of fun, and you have a lot of players that are fully engaged and fully rested.
On those coaching decisions, right, like, you don't have a lot of time to figure out, like, what lines might look good together. I mean, the goalies, too, right? Like, especially, like, this is maybe something they're dealing with on the U.S. team right now. When you have three options of guys that are all some of the best goalies in the NHL, like, how do you really play it? Because you might not have time to even play everybody one game. You probably just roll one or two of them out there.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't have time. And you know, because if you think about coaches, you especially the goaltending position, you're hoping to get only one guy can be in the net. You're trying to find out, okay, who when they get in their rhythm is going to be the best for us. But now they don't have enough games to get the guys in a rhythm to see, actually evaluate, okay, which one of these two or three is in the rhythm. So yes, that is a challenge. So, you know, the guy that gets the net first, that's the importance. If he can get the net first and show that he's in the zone, it's going to make it tougher for the, you know, tougher for the coach to change and put the next guy in there. Yeah, lots of different dynamics. Makes it all fun to watch.
Former Sabres head coach and former coach of the national program as well, Don Granato, joining us on the Western Hotline. We're seeing Tage on the wing. You know, you had Tage at the wing. You put him back at center at one point. We actually saw some bouncing around for him this year on that. How do you feel watching him out there? Like, he scored the golden goal in the 3-on-3 overtime, which is another topic that they're going 3-on-3 for a gold medal. Like, holy cow. But how is it watching Tage out there, knowing the player he's become?
Love it. I mean, I've obviously spent a long time with him. You know, first met him when he was 15, 16 years old, and got to coach him then. So to see the progress and see the success, see him just establish himself. And now as an Olympian, I mean, he deserved it. He should have been named initially on that Four Nations tournament a year ago. He wasn't. But true to Tage, he stayed with it. He stayed very focused in the right manners. And I think he'll be ready for this. You know, shifting to the wing, you know, when you have players, especially when I had players at the U.S. program, you know, you got the foresight. They may not. And it's, you want them to learn different positions. And I talked to, even when I was coaching there, the value of using training camp and shifting guys around and shifting line, because you're going to, like, Tage might not have made the team if he couldn't play wing, or he might not have made the team if he couldn't have played center. So you want to be able to expand your ability, you know, through playing different positions and being comfortable and competent at those. And Tasia's done that. So I think shifting to the wing, I believe they've had him with Dylan Larkin. He's very familiar with Larks. They were at the program together. That helps. And I think that he'll be a key guy for them.
Are you feeling any sort of like this time in Team USA's whatever, the history of Team USA, like if they were to be able to come home with gold, would it kind of represent to you a long-term growth, acceleration, you know, whatever. If you want to see evening on the world stage with Canada, the U.S. is not quite a co-favorite, but no one would be shocked if they did win it. And there have been Olympic Games in the past where it would be a shock, and they've been in the gold medal game. But to get to the top, how much would it mean to you and to everybody that's been part of Team USA over the years?
Well, it's just nice to be on the top. I mean, I think that's just from the competitive side, that's what you want. As far as is what you mentioned there, Jeremy, I think everybody knows around the world in hockey that the U.S. is in line to take it over. Just the growth of the game in the United States, the fact that the NHL is working and has worked now for years to grow the game in markets like Arizona or, you know, Austin Matthews or, you know, has come from and other NHL players in California markets. We enjoy the luxury that other countries don't. And that's the, you know, the speed of growth in our country. So when you look at the trajectory, yes, we are going to take it over. And I don't think anybody is questioning that. They're trying to make sure that is prolonged, I guess. So winning this would help nudge toward that. But this group of players, I can tell you, having coached lots of them, has a different level of confidence when they put a USA jersey on than those players 20 and 30 years ago. Hmm. The thing that made the 96 team, the 96 US team, I think it was the World Cup team, significant was that was really the first time a group of players put a US jersey on and said, we're better than Canada. And that was, you know, I think Pat LaFontaine was on that team. Phil Housley might have been on that team. Chris Chelios, big names. And that was really the first time in USA hockey history where the group of 20 that put the jersey on said, we're better. Even if they have Gretzky and Mario Lemieux on the other side, we're better. And there's been long windows in between where that's not happened. That is now happening in the U.S. And it's happened through, you know, starts at World Juniors and the players coming and learning right away their first time putting a U.S. jersey on. They expect to beat the team across from them. So it makes it a lot different. And again, it'll be fun to watch.
Do you put any of that on what has been focused on with these players as they've come up, or could it just be resources to the game growing? Because the other thing that I view that looks different to me from this team versus maybe some teams of the past is just the speed and the skill that the guys have, especially down the middle, Don. Like the center group, Eichel, Matthews, Larkin, Thompson, I mean, there's not enough really from all the play center, is closer to Canada just from a speed skill level than it feels like it ever has been.
It is. There's no question. And obviously we know the speed of the NHL and hockey players in general, athletes in general, because training for all athletes has gotten better over the last 20 years and equipment's gotten better. So ice conditions have gotten better. So, yes, there's no doubt it's faster. I think, you know, if we talk historically, Canada always, they would love to knock the U.S. Well, U.S. has good athletes, but they don't have hockey sense. They're not growing players that read and react to the game of hockey well enough. That has changed immensely. I mean, we have, you know, obviously there's not a player on this roster that doesn't have hockey sense. And you know, it's kind of this intangible term that we've used forever in the game. But that was the knock against Americans, and I haven't heard that. I mean, I heard that a lot 10, 15 years ago. I don't hear that ever anymore. And that is evidence behind the scenes as well of our growth.
Don Granato on the Western Hotline. Don, I'm looking at that 96 roster you're talking about, and you know, thinking about how the game has changed. There might be no better way to think about how the game has changed than to look at a defense corps from 96 versus a defense corps now and what they do now, right? Like this U.S. defense corps is thought to be the strength of the team and the reason that if they're going to win, it's going to be because they're
because their blue line is so good.
Yeah, and that is for sure. And I'm probably most proud of that because I've had lots of guys that are in that defensive group. And the game changed. If you think back of when obstruction, you know, lockout, of, what was it, 2004, 2005, and the NHL came in with the rules of, you know, obstruction. And we're going to call, and it was just penalty after penalty. And in that era before that, it was a defining moment in hockey. You could hold your stick parallel to the ice as a defenseman. So it would be, you know, 2 feet to your left or right if you were lefty or righty, and put it right on a guy's hips or in his gut, really, and ride him out. So you could actually play a player one-on-one very easily as a defenseman. So when the rush was coming at you and a player with speed was coming at you, you just put your stick in his gut and you rode him into the glass. And you could control him the whole way. That became a penalty. So when that happened, defensemen had to learn to defend completely different. And that's where you saw the ability over time now. The NHL took a long time for them. I was an assistant coach the year that happened in St. Louis in the Blues. And I watched our defensemen struggle because we had an old defensive core. And I thought to myself, we've got to figure a way to get skating defensemen, size doesn't matter anymore, into the game because you can't use your stick anymore. And that's changed. And you see Quinn Hughes and Zach Werenski, Noah Hanifin, you know, these guys can skate. They're mobile. They're agile. And it's a different game. And it's taken that long since that was 20 years ago now for the NHL to actually change and realize that they need different players to play those positions, a more athletic player.
So if you're coaching Team USA, who do you match against McDavid, the McDavid line, you know? Is that
You hit it. You hope you have the matchup.
Yeah.
Because that's key. And there is no question, I'll answer that question very quick for you and easily. I would, because I've watched it happen, Dylan Larkin. I watched Dylan Larkin in a world championship bronze medal game in Denmark, Copenhagen, and Dylan Larkin. We ended up winning the bronze over Canada. We both lost the night before, so you play the next day, you're a little bit disappointed, but you're in the bronze medal game. And Dylan had Connor so frustrated because he could skate with him. And Dylan competes before the puck drops. He's competing for position in the faceoff, which aggravates players against him. So, yeah, easy call on that one. If they get to that point, watch Dylan Larkin on Connor McDavid.
All right, very good. Well, Don, thanks very much. It's been a pleasure. And enjoy the tournament, you know? I mean, it's on in the middle of the day, so we like that. I'll just stay up until, you know, 10 p.m. And then try to get up the next morning. Hey, so
you guys as well. I enjoyed this time. I missed you guys a bit. I say that. You asked some tough questions. This was great today, so I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining us, and all the best.
All right, likewise.
Thanks, Don.
See you guys.
Don Granato, who, of course, pillar of the U.S. team. He said I could say it. I'm saying it. Pillar. Head coach from 2013 to 2016, of course, former Sabres coach as well.
I mean, you can hear it. He's got experience with like almost every player on the team.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a coincidence, by the way, that like it's not just him, but what was his focus when he was here? Speed and skill.
Yeah.
What was his focus at the U.S. program when he was there? Speed and skill. What do all of the American players that are going to play today have? Speed and skill. That's what's different. 20 years ago, they were all gritty and defensive and tough.
Right.
And some are good players, but now it's just... And you still have the Kachucks, so it's not like you don't have any of that.
True, true.
You've got guys flying around the ice that are going to take the ice today.
It's a point about how the game has changed. Like, looking at the 96 team, he mentioned 96 World Cup team. Brian Leetch is on that team. He's the captain of that team, a 5'11" defenseman.
Yep.
And the other defensemen on that team are 6'5", 6'4". There's a couple 5'10s like Housley and Schneider.
Like Darian Hatcher on
that
team.
But all I can think of is like, would Quinn Hughes have a chance to make that team in 1996? You know, maybe.
I don't know if they would. They would think he was an alien from outer space.
Right. Right.
Well, they think he's Bobby Orr, maybe.
Maybe.
No. You're right though. Like maybe he might not get to a point where he was a defenseman.
Right.
Like, if he existed back then, he'd probably have been playing forward as a kid and in college and all the way through the league. Like, he wouldn't exist on the blue line because some coach along the way would have said, you're not a defenseman.
He's awesome to watch. Unbelievable.
He is insane. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I can't believe Vancouver traded him.
Yeah, it's tough.
I mean, they're blowing it up, I guess, but that he wasn't going to sign. It's not the worst thing in the world.
803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe, our thanks to Don Granato. Reached out, chatted with him. Always a pleasure. So what's up? What else we got? We're open the rest of the time here. I've got a good story in sports I want to get to on the other side that nobody here is going to be too mad about, and we can talk about. Maybe the best thing happening in sports is not happening in the Olympics, but it's worth a chat, and it is happening internationally. We'll get to that next here on WGR.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Buying pants shouldn't take this much effort. Too many options, inconsistent sizing, and styles that don't work across your day. You want something comfortable, sharp, and reliable without guessing, returning, or buying five different pairs. That's why there's Jack Archer.
Yes, jackarcher.com simplifies everything with the Jet Setter Tech Pant, one versatile pair designed to take you from work to weekend without missing a beat. Easy to wear, easy to style, and easy to shop for. The Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built for all-day comfort. They stretch, breathe, and hold their shape, giving you a consistent fit and polished look every time. Backed by thousands of five-star reviews, they're the dependable pants you'll reach for daily.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order with code GETJACK at jackarcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at jackarcher.com for 15% off your first order.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
You know, I kind of used to hate February as a sports month. Because generally, you know, now it's a little different now where you think the Bills could be playing into February, right? And it hasn't happened. We know that. But for many years in the drought, of course, you know, it was just, there's no Bills football. Obviously, their season's done beginning of January, basically, then. And then the Sabres just, they've been in their drought for a long time. So by the time you get to February, it's like, what are we doing here? We're thinking about the NHL draft. And even for me, like Syracuse basketball, not great. They're going to miss the tournament again for like a fifth straight year. And even when they've been pretty good, it's like, you know, it's sparse. You could watch some games, and that was cool. The only thing holding me over, you do have baseball, but they're just reporting. They're not playing yet. We're not in that mode yet. And then you get the weather outside. So, you know, just not great, you know, sports living. But it's totally different now. We're in a totally new era with the Bills. We know that. And the Bills go to this offseason with a lot of changes. This month is going to be really interesting. Got the combine coming up in a couple of weeks. Got new coaches, new coaching staff, new head coach. I think there's some things out there the Bills could do to be aggressive. We'll see about that. And you got the Sabres right now playing the way they are, where they are in the standings. Everybody's just super dialed in and I think on edge a little bit for when they return and come back in the final, you know, what, 25 games or so, what that's going to look like. And we have this Olympics that's, oh, by the way, and Syracuse still is not very good, but we have this Olympics coming up and now, and it's happening now, the Olympics. But how about ice hockey? The Olympic ice hockey returning for the first time in 12 years. The last time NHL, I shouldn't say Olympic ice hockey returning, of course, the NHL players playing in the Olympics for the first time in 12 years since 2014. And it all really starts today. Rasmus Dahlin will be on the ice. Sweden plays. Tomorrow will be Team USA playing. So we're going to talk about that here today in the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. To kick off the program with my guy, Sneaky Joe DiBiase, I'm putting in for you to get some overtime today, Joe, from the bosses. I don't know if it'll work, but I'm putting in for you to get some overtime today. Thanks for doing this.
That's fine. I love talking about Olympic hockey. I haven't had a chance, right? You said it. It's been 12 years. I haven't really had an opportunity to, so I love it.
Let's start there. Just kind of your feelings when, you know, over the last, you know, 12 years knowing, okay, well, no Olympics again, and then finally realizing, okay, and over that time period, of course, we've had the four nations face off. We'd have different international tournaments. You kind of got to whet your appetite for it a little bit, and you say, okay, let's do this. And then to get to this point, how cool is it?
Oh, it's a dream. It really should be, you know, more regular, I think. They don't go because, what, it's in South Korea, and then it's in China, and the games are going to be on in the middle of the night. And the U.S., and the NHL takes that as an opportunity to not give their players away, I guess. I mean, I hope that this becomes a mainstay for the next decade. They are in Italy here. They will be in France in 4 years, I would imagine. You know, time of day works out, I think, for that. And then they're in Salt Lake City in 34, so I obviously would assume they'll be there for the U.S. So I think that era of not having NHLers there is hopefully over for the time being, because the tournament just, it happens, but you just don't really get invested in it, I think, when the NHL guys are not there and it's not best on best. I mean, there was was it the 2018 games? Like, Derek Roy is on Team Canada, who hadn't been in the NHL for, like, years. And, like, you know, Owen Power is there as a college player before he had made it to the NHL. So it just isn't the same at all when they're not there. And I love the roster building of it, too. Like, it even goes beyond the games. Like, I love paying attention to, you know, what's Bill Guerin going to do between picking Jason Robertson, who's a 50-goal scorer, and, you know, whether JT Miller is going to make the team, and is Tage going to make it. Like, I love all of that. The games are, of course, the best. I think it's the best hockey gets. It's the number one opportunity to have the best talent in the world on the ice at the same time competing. They're not going to care enough about the All-Star game just because there aren't the stakes there. This, you put nationality and patriotism behind it, and I think you get the best hockey you can ask for.
Do you remember 2010, Ryan Miller? How much do you remember that? That Sidney Crosby, Ryan Miller, Canada?
Oh yeah, I felt like, I don't know if you were the same way or if everybody was, but like when Zach Parise scores in the final seconds to tie it, I think I celebrated as if Chris Drury had tied a playoff game.
Yeah,
I remember, into it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that was the super cool part, was that it was Ryan Miller. It was our goalie. It was our guy, right?
Right.
I mean, that was the cool part of it. And Lindy was actually on the bench for Canada, I think, right?
He was.
Those Olympics, if I remember right. And, you know, but since then, what's funny and what's interesting, you're talking about all this as you're going through it. It's really been the World Juniors. It's been the more kind of heightened event for a lot of people, but especially us here in Buffalo. Why? Because the Sabres have not been good, and it's really been about prospects, right? It's been about prospects, and we're always like, who's on the World Juniors? And it was a property of the Sabres, right? Mm-hmm. And we can watch these guys. And now, though, the Sabres actually have some Olympians and on their real roster, and they're going to the Olympics, and it's coinciding. And this whole Tage Thompson saga has been super interesting to follow. So you said the roster building. How did you think that they did with the roster here? You go back to the Four Nations, and I know there was a lot of talk about why wasn't Tage on it? Why were other guys on it? Mm-hmm. You get a year later, Tage does make it. What do you think about how Bill Guerin and Team USA and the Olympic Committee put together this roster?
I think they did okay. I think there were a couple of decisions that could have been a little bit better. They have long, I think, approached it as you cannot, and they say it all the time, you can't just build an all-star team. And I think sometimes they take that a little too far, a little too literal. I'm not so sure, though, they did that here. Like, there were only a couple of decisions that I think you could say that about. It just, to me, goes to, don't feel like you have to have one line, typically your fourth line, that has to get run over every time they're on the ice when you play Canada, especially. And not planning to have a line be hemmed up in their own end and have to defend. And I think, you know, like JT Miller's presence on the team maybe is that a little bit, but there really isn't a long list, I would say, of those types of decisions. Like, they have a
a star-studded, talented roster. I think they made the right decision by taking Tage. I think they made the right decision by taking Clayton Keller. I do think, though, you could make a serious argument that they made two mistakes, leaving Cole Caulfield and Jason Robertson home, who are, this was true a week ago, double check if it still is, they were like two of the top three goal scorers in the NHL in the last like 2 months, and they were not selected to the team. Maybe you wanted to pick one of those just to have one more guy in the bottom six that can score goals. I think they now have the talent to match up with Canada, and I think they should act like it, that they don't have to build this plucky, hardworking, grinder-type team that's going to defend well. Like, no, I think they can go toe-to-toe, talent-wise. And I do think, for the most part, they did do that. Like, they didn't really make any egregious decision that has me thinking, like, they don't have a shot. So, I like it.
The Team Canada is favored.
They are,
yeah. over Team USA, you know, to win gold. It's Canada, then USA, then Sweden. I mean, we're expecting, you know, Team USA and Team Canada to kind of be on a collision course here. They won't play in the preliminary round. Team USA starts tomorrow in their preliminary round, but we'll see where it goes. All right, so remember the Four Nations. What was the egregious, why was everybody mad about the Rangers guys, right, at the Four Nations a couple years ago?
The Rangers guys, yeah. Last year, that was worse.
Yes, last year, sorry.
That was worse than, I think, what they did this go-round, although I think Vinny Trocheck being on this team, you could argue it. But last year, yeah, like Chris Kreider being on the team, Trocheck being on the team, they had not had good seasons at all. They were both past their prime. And I think a lot of people just thought, well, Chris Drury is the assistant general manager for Team USA, and he's in the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. He's been on the Olympic team multiple times. Like, he's a very respected figure in that organization. And they went with his guys. Like, that's, you know, I think that's probably why they did it. And they left Tage home, and they left a bunch of Caulfield home and a bunch of other, I think, way better players that could have filled in. They didn't have as big a roster, which is another reason why that, I think, ended up happening. So, yeah, like, I did not like what they did last year at the Four Nations. I mean, they still made it to overtime, right, of the gold medal game, which I think speaks to their talent.
Sure.
But yeah, they didn't take Kreider this time, which I guess is a good thing.
And of course, Team Canada. I mean, you look at this incredible roster they have, right? They're just so loaded. And yeah, you could definitely say like the U.S. can compete with them. There's no doubt about it. But there's a reason why they're the favorites in this. I mean, some of the names are the best of the best in the NHL, obviously.
Did you see the lines this morning for them?
No, it's funny you say that. I'm literally just looking at it right now. I think Pierre LeBrun tweeted them out today celebrating McDavid and Wilson. Yeah.
You do just see the lines on paper and think, oh, man, how does anybody beat centers down the middle, McDavid, McKinnon, and Crosby?
Like,
how do you beat that? Because, like, they have so much elite talent, especially those three. Makar on the back end. Like, you could argue, I think that Canada has the best three players. I mean, I don't think you can argue with two of them. Like, McDavid and McKinnon are the best two players in the world. And I think a lot of people would just consider Makar the best defenseman, and he's probably third. So,
yeah, that's good. Like, that's a good exercise. If you just did a draft, Canada and USA, like, how long before you get to a Team USA guy?
I would probably pick a Team USA guy fourth.
Matthews?
I would take Eichel over Matthews this year.
Eichel. Okay, that's fine. Yeah,
but
that's
or fair. Quinn Hughes. Maybe I would take Quinn Hughes, actually. But that's part of the exercise is after the top three, it's back and forth or it's balanced or you might even go more American than Canadian.
Yep, 100%.
Like, to me, like comparing the two teams is really interesting, and it's why – like you mentioned, Canada is a favorite, but they're not like a massive favorite. Like some places, it's like plus 130 for Canada, plus 180 for the Americans. Like it's close enough. And I think a big reason why is, well, Canada's got the best players at the top. That's why they're favored, and they still have a ton of talent. But the U.S. has never been closer with Matthews and Eichel down the middle. Like that's as close to McKinnon and McDavid as they've ever been by far. When they were taking, you know, Brandon Dubinsky's to the Olympics. And I think it's not close that the U.S. has a better blue line and better goaltending. And I think that's what really closes the gap, is the U.S. has the defensemen, I think, on a level above Canada. And goalie, I don't know if you heard us talking about this earlier.
I did not.
You go into it on paper with the U.S. has the way better goalie situation. Like, you could argue that the three goalies for the U.S. would all start for Canada. And Hellebuck and Oettinger are maybe the best two in the world. And Jordan,
let's just tell everybody who that is. So we got
Connor Hellebuck.
Hellebuck, Oettinger, Oettinger, yep. and Jeremy Swayman.
Jeremy Swayman from Boston.
And for the Canada, and you're right about this, because Canada, you have Binnington. I mean, yep. I mean, you never know what you're gonna get from him, right?
Right.
Darcy Kuemper and Logan Thompson of the Capitals.
Yeah, like, to me, if I were them, I would definitely start Thompson, but mm-hmm. I don't know what they're gonna do. They like Binnington. He played in the Four Nations. He is got this mentality, or this I should say this reputation, as yeah. he shows up in the big moments. And that's what could get him in there. He did play great in the Four Nations. I mean, he robbed Austin Matthews in overtime to keep that game alive. But he's been terrible this year for St. Louis. Like, horrible season. And you've got two of the best goalies in the world on the other side. But the problem there is Hellebuck and Oettinger both have the opposite reputation of, well, they kind of crack in the big moments. Hellebuck in the playoffs last year and before that. Oettinger getting pulled last year in the Western Conference Finals. Like, you've got more talented guys for the Americans, but you've got this question of whether, you know, they kind of let you down when you get to the biggest games.
Did you know the connection between Steve Kerr and Macklin Celebrini?
No, I did not. What is it?
So apparently, Steve Kerr has known Macklin Celebrini since he was 12 years old when... Steve Kerr, when Celebrini's dad, Rick, was hired as the director of sports medicine for the Warriors in 2018.
Okay.
I had no idea.
No, I did not know that
he
at all.
He is now the vice president of player health and medicine for the Warriors. So there's an interesting connection. I'm just looking over some of the storylines that are going with that. Because I bring it up because you look at some of the guys here, like Celebrini, some of the youth, right, that's kind of come in here. And I put Tage there, too, because he did miss out. He is still, now he's not as young as he was, obviously, you know, the last time, obviously, Olympics or, you know, and these international competitions. But there is a little bit more youth, I think, on both these sides than what we've seen over the last several times.
Oh, yeah.
International competition.
The U.S., I don't think, is returning anybody that's played in the Olympics, I don't think. Like, that actually, like, when they decided their captain and they picked Matthews, in part it's because, well, they don't have, like, a, you know, like, Patrick Kane's not at a level anymore, where he's one of these legacy American guys. Like, they're all kind of the same age bracket. Canada still has Crosby, so at least they've got that. But, no, like, that's another part of the Olympics that I think is exciting, and what I think that the NHL has missed out on and miscalculated is the games don't just grow your game, it grows stars. Ryan Miller was not as big of a name at all until he got to the Olympics. In fact, it's what some hockey fans might remember him most for. And I remember when there was a time, like, immediately after the games where, like, ESPN was following the Sabres on a like SportsCenter on a day-to-day basis because of Miller, and his profile had been raised. Yeah. And, you know, that's happened, I think, a lot for other guys. I'm excited to see that this go around for whoever. Like, it could be, you mentioned Macklin Celebrini. Like, he's been insane in the NHL this year. I think he's fourth in points. He's playing with McDavid. I mean, he could become a household name, not just for, like, the hardest core hockey fans, but for everybody, you know, if he goes off in the Olympics. Tage could do that. I think you have two Sabres that have the opportunity. Like, Tage, if he goes on a goal-scoring streak, would become a much bigger name than he ever has been. I think Dahlin is the same thing for Sweden. So, yeah, I think there are guys that are going to have their profiles raised in the next, you know, 2 weeks.
Bedard didn't make it, though, right? He's not on this.
Bedard was one of the questionable ones for Canada.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting there. All right, so let's talk about Tage real quick. How does he fit into all this? How do you think Tage fits in? Where he fits in? What have you seen from the lines and how that's all working out?
I like the line he's on. He's on the right wing at practice with Dylan Larkin at center, and then Kyle Connor has been on the left for a couple days. The first day it was Jack Hughes, but now it's been Kyle Connor, which I think that is on paper going to be the U.S.'s third line. I'd expect them to play the third most minutes. He's second power play unit. Like, I think that's a good role for him. He could go to center at some point. I think he's probably sticking on the wing. I think it's a big reason why he is on the team, is he has proven that he has versatility
right.
to play center, to play wing. I wondered earlier in the year if that's why he was playing wing for the Sabres for a bit, was this is he wants to do it to prove to Team USA that he can play at any position. And when you have that many good centers, you kind of need that. So I think him with Larkin is a good match. I think, though, he has a chance to move up in the lineup. Like, to me, if he scores a couple of goals in these preliminary games, there's a spot on that Matthews line. Like, Matt Boldy's a great player. Jake Gensel's a great player. And those are the two that Matthews has been skating with. I think, though, if Tage is scoring and maybe one of those two isn't, that maybe you could see Tage move up the lineup with Matthews at some point. The only line I couldn't see changing is the Eichel-Kachuk's line. Like, to me, that line probably sits in stone. So I like it for Tage, and I think he's got an opportunity to maybe get up to, you know, the 1A, 1B line.
First game for Team USA is tomorrow, 3:10 our time here, 9:10 p.m. in Milan against Latvia. They also get Denmark. They also get Germany. I don't think anybody's expecting any sort of upset there. You do have other teams, though, that could pull upsets, like Sweden, obviously, and if you want to call them upsets, like that's a team that people think could be very good, obviously. Finland's always there. We know UPL, unfortunately, due to the injury, won't be able to play. How do you handicap outside Canada and United States, and especially Rasmus Dahlin's team, Team Sweden, and any chances that these teams have?
Yeah, Sweden definitely the best of them. They're the only team to me that I could reasonably see winning gold that isn't the U.S. or Canada. Yeah. I mean, they definitely deserve to be a tier below. They have talent all over. They just are missing, I would say, that McDavid, McKinnon, Eichel, Matthews level talent. I mean, you could argue Dahlin's their best player. I really think that's like Willie Nylander, maybe you would put right there, but he's hurt going into this, and we'll see if he misses a game. So otherwise, I like their group a lot. I like the goaltending. I wouldn't be floored or stunned if they won it. I think it's possible. Beyond them, Finland, I just think have a tough time seeing them doing it without Barkov. Barkov's their best player. He's their number one center. All situations. They've got depth. They've got good talent. Like they'll be in it to medal. But I would be surprised if they were able to beat the U.S. or Canada. The one other really dark horse team that I've been throwing out there that I'll say it again here. I don't think they have a great overall team. I think if they play one of these big four countries, U.S., Canada, Sweden, Finland, they probably get run over. But how do you get an upset? You need some luck. You need a goalie getting hot. And you probably need your power play to get you a goal or two. And I'm just going to throw Germany out there. Just throw Germany. Okay. They're not a country that has ever really done damage at a major hockey tournament like this when it's best on best. And they don't have that many NHLers. But here's the one formula I keep throwing out for them. They've got a goalie, Philip Grubauer, who plays in the NHL and has had an excellent season this year for Seattle. He's been great. And they've got just enough guys to fill out a scary power play. They don't have many other NHLers, but they're going to roll out there with Dreisaitl, Tim Stützle of Ottawa, who's their number one center. Paterka's probably on the other side. And then Moritz Seider, who's the Red Wings' best defenseman at the point. Like, to me, they get a game where they score a power play goal or two and Grubauer stands on his head. Like, I think they would be the one, like, really low-level team that could have that one game that just everybody is, you know, wowed by.
They also have, a guy who plays for Syracuse Crunch. Is that it? I don't know. There we go.
They have a couple AHL guys on their team, too.
Yeah, there you go.
All and right. They've got
Sokolyak.
Who's the former Sabre? Dominic Cahoon. They've got some lower level, some like old NHL, like third, fourth line guys. Yeah.
Okay. Who leads the NHL in scoring when it's all said? Team USA in scoring when it's all said and done.
I would probably go with. That's a good question. Because I think Eichel and the Kachucks are the best line, but I think they're going to see the toughest matchups, which maybe that only matters once you get to the tough games anyway. I'd say Eichel. I think he's better. He's having a better year than Matthews. He'll get power play time. I like his line better. I'll go with Eichel.
Okay, a couple minutes on the Sabres before I let you go, and I really appreciate it. Sneaky Joe DiBiase, Jeremy and Joe, of course, in the morning, 6 to 10. Joe doing a little overtime work here, staying on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. When we are done with this, we're going to be very close to the NHL trade deadline, which is Friday. March 6th. I think we're both in agreement. They're not moving Alex Tuch. Even if he doesn't sign an extension, correct, he is a guy you have to have on this team. Yep. Then you figure it out later. But what are they going to look to do, do you think? What do they need to look to do?
I think they need a couple of things. I think they need, on a lower level, they need another defenseman that can log 14, 15 minutes a night on your third pair. And not just that, because I think there's a lot being made right now of how much Lindy is playing those top four. Like Power, Samuelson, Dahlin, and Byram are all playing like 22 minutes a night plus at a minimum. And that's going well. They're all playing well. You got to prepare for a plan B. What if something happens to one of those four? It's not just that your third pair hasn't been executing well. It's what happens if one of those guys gets an injury and someone's got to go up into the top four? Because right now, there's not an answer to that question. Like Michael Kesselring has not showed you anything to tell you that he's ready for that or healthy enough to do that. I don't think you want Metsa or Bryson doing it. So I think they need to find a third pair defenseman. And I would like to see them swing big at forward. And there are two guys in St. Louis that are both super interesting. Robert Thomas, who's had back-to-back 80-point seasons. Jordan Kyrou, who's had four straight 30-goal seasons. They're on the rumor mill because St. Louis is like 14 points out of a playoff spot. They might be ready to blow it up. They're both 27 years old, like right in their primes. And to me, like that's expensive, right? Like that's a first round pick. That's one of your best prospects and maybe, you know, another throw in along the way and you're competing with other teams. But that would be a level of player that goes right to the top of your lineup in the top six that's playing on the power play and hopefully helping that out. I would be very hopeful to see them add a player of that caliber up front. But I think depth defenseman needs to be like the minimum.
Is there a scenario here where you're okay moving guys that are on this roster and contributing right now to be able to make those things happen? I mean, I'm thinking about a guy like Jack Quinn, like where he is.
I don't want to see
Jack Quinn traded, right? But that might be what it takes to do something like that.
So he's become the Sabres version of AJ Epenesa.
Like, okay,
every day someone's got a mock trade on Twitter that includes Jack Quinn. Like everyone's trying to trade Jack Quinn right now. And I think there's reasons behind it. He has been decent this year. Like he is putting up numbers. He's had a couple of games where he's been awesome and led the way in scoring. But he's the one guy on the roster that I just don't think gives them anything in his own end. Like they are a very good two-way forward group all around. Like there's not maybe another player at forward that I would tell you is a weakness in his own end. And I think Quinn is that. I think some of his advanced numbers look really poor. So I would capitalize on him being on like a 50 to 60 point pace and upgrading from him. Because I don't mind a guy being one-dimensional offensively in your forward group. Like I think every good team's got a guy or two like that. But you know what those guys usually give you? Power play. They usually give you power play. And Quinn isn't giving you that. He's not helping you on the man advantage. So to me, I wouldn't mind even replacing him with another guy that you really get frustrated by from their two-way game. But give me someone like Quinn that is going to have a little bit more offense and is going to go on that top man advantage and hopefully help more there.
I would also tell you that, I mean, you have to consider if he can stay healthy, but that is the big consideration. Josh Norris is going to help this team, right? I mean, he's going to help this team when he comes back, and they need a guy like that too, but I just don't know how you can trust him to stay healthy, I guess.
I know. Like, he's going to come back, and I've liked him when he's been out there, but I don't, like, what are the odds he's available for the Sabres night one of the playoffs should they make it?
I know.
Like, it's a coin flip at best. It might be worse than that. You count the number of games missed, and it's more than the games played. So really, you should probably consider it to be an underdog that he's available for you. And like, does he make it through a long physical playoff series? And if you if you win a round, I guess if they win a round, we're not really worried about any of this stuff, are we?
But no. And by the way, you also. This team is not very good on faceoffs. Like, he can help a little bit in that area.
Right.
Like, they got it. You know, Dunn can help in that area. Like, they got to have that part of it, too. There's just little things, margins, obviously, with this team that are going to matter here.
And that's where, like, I brought up Thomas earlier of the Blues, Robert Thomas. And he's a center. He's been their number one center in St. Louis for years now. And to me, like, does Jarmo Kekalainen see the positional groups right now very differently than Adams did, because Adams' plan at center was clearly Norris and McLeod and Tage, and like, these are my options in the top three. But Yarmo might look at the state of the team right now and think, well, I don't really trust Norris to stay healthy, and how much do I really want to put on Noah Oslin's plate to be one of my top three centers every single night and produce when he also is proven to play on the wing? You add a guy like Robert Thomas, and suddenly I'm not as reliant on Josh Norris to be healthy. I mean, he's still here, but I think now you're protected, and your center group down the middle is going to be one of the top units probably in the conference, I think, no matter who's available to you.
Thanks a lot for sticking around, buddy. I know I know you just did a four-hour show yourself, so I really appreciate it. And I'm excited for tomorrow. I'm excited. By the way, great job by the women yesterday. I mean, what a game. They just dominated Canada.
Oh, they were awesome.
I know you watched that game, too. They're incredible, by the way.
It was never close. I mean, even when the score was like 1-0, you just saw it. Like, yeah. Canada had like no chances the whole game. So.
All right. Well, we'll be listening tomorrow as well as we prepare for the U.S. Olympics. Sneaky Joe DiBiase, have a great rest of your day, buddy.
You too. Thanks, Al.
All right, that is Sneaky Joe DiBiase with Jeremy and Joe in the morning. We'll take a time out here. When we come back, what I want to do is I'm going to play some of last week's press conference from Joe Brady, actually, the Bills head coach, who actually met with the media unexpectedly after all the coordinators met with the media 1 week ago, about 6 days ago, last Thursday. So we'll play that for you, and then we're going to lead you up to 11 o'clock, and Tyler Dunn's going to join me. That's right, our guy Tyler Dunn. You know him. He's been at different media outlets, but he does his own thing. Does a great job covering the NFL, the Bills, storylines of the Bills, the NFL, Super Bowl. We'll get with Tyler Dunn at 11 a.m. Joe Brady from last week when we come back here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Thanks a lot to Sneaky Joe DiBiase for joining me here in this first segment talking U.S. Olympic hockey and hockey and Sabres overall.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
As a man, finding a truly great pair of pants can feel impossible. Some wrinkle the moment you sit down. Others look fine but don't travel well, don't move well, or completely lose their shape throughout the day. When you're flying, commuting, or packing light, most pants just aren't built for real life.
That's why there's Jack Archer. JackArcher.com makes the Jet Setter Tech Pant designed to be the one pair of pants you actually need. Comfortable enough for travel, polished enough for work, and versatile enough for wherever the day takes you, the Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built for all-day comfort. With flexible stretch, customizable fit options, and thousands of five-star reviews, these are the pants you'll reach for every day.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order using code GETJACK at JackArcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at JackArcher.com for 15% off your first order.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback, I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Get sweet deals at True North convenience stores when you join True Rewards. Save a dollar when you buy any two king or standard size candy bars. Get more Kit Kat Crunch, Milky Way Caramel, and more peanut M&Ms. Choose any of your chocolate favorites when you grab two king or standard size candy bars and save $1. Become a True Rewards member today and save on so much more. Download from the Apple app or Google Play Store for more details. True North convenience stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's Mike Schoke and the Bulldog.
How many bees is a swarm? Is two a swarm or three? Whatever. How many does it have to be?
And be like seven.
It's Mike Schoke.
How many times do you have to be stung to have been swarmed? And I was like, dude, I got swarmed. I got stung only once, but I was swarmed.
And the Bulldog.
You insist you were swarmed.
There were bees, man. Like, plural. Big, lots of S's. Lots of E's and S. Bees. That was not
bees.
Fun.
Bees.
Right. That was not fun.
On WGR.
Hey, man. That kind of hurt.
Sports Radio 550.
Friends and spouses.
Mm-hmm.
On my phone about whether I should have given the kids the money back. This is a good one.
Yeah. No.
When do you learn a bet's a bet? If I lose that bet on one dice roll, there is 100%, no questions asked, nothing even gets said. There's no story giving them that money.
Of course, you're an adult. You have a job. You have income. These are teenagers.
Their income is their parents. They do okay.
That's why
these kids are not hurting.
That's why I asked. I think the important question of does this end with them calling their parents calling? Saying, oh. Why did Billy come home 20 bucks later?
You know, their parents don't even know.
That's probably right. Well, but that's no like. What are we talking about here? 16 years old. 16.
Yeah,
right.
At least
I think either one of my kids would have really felt 20 bucks when they were 16 years old. Like, you know, it's not a lot of money, but for a 16-year-old, that's, you know, that's a drive-through trip with your
that's
girlfriend.
Right. I'm not disputing that.
Yeah.
Make it five next time.
Whose idea was the 20?
I think it might have been mine. With us, I don't know. I forget. With us now on the West Shore Hotline is Jeff Bell. Stop talking. Right. Footballguys.com, the always excellent rookie draft guide is out. It's free. Footballguys.com. It's not only maybe the best, I can't even say maybe, right? Jeff's listening. Fantasy football website there is, but it's where I got into it. That's the Sigmund, right, Bulldog? It's Sigmund Bloom and connecting with him and then starting to really, it became an obsession for me. I worked things out with Jeff earlier today. He's going to join us a few times here before the draft starting today. Jeff is on the phone. When we connected earlier, he said, I won't have access to my studio mic at 4. So, Jeff, first question, who is using your mic?
My mic is in a different location. So I'm in my office here at work, and that is at my home location. So I'm using what I've got on hand.
Okay, we're making it work.
And right now, I'm a CPA, so we're making it work.
Oh, wow. I remember that now. We got to be careful with Jeff when we get to mid-April. Before
that's true. Yeah,
there might be some
big ramp up.
There might be some times when you're otherwise, occupied. Well, thank you for arranging this with us. The draft guide is out, footballguys.com. What in general, from way outside, what kind of year is this? Either by position, I know we're talking here about a fantasy site and the skill positions primarily. How does this year compare? How does it rate?
I think the talk that you're going to hear is that it's a weaker class. We obviously saw Fernando Mendoza win the national championship, win the Heisman Trophy, going first overall. So that at least gives us one quarterback. Jeremiah Love is the talk of everything. He'll be right there for Mendoza. I think when it comes into talking about a weaker class, sometimes we get these years that you flash back to 2021 when there was the Jamar Chase and the Kyle Pitts and multiple quarterbacks going at the top of the draft. And you felt like in your Superflex Dynasty leagues where you felt really good having anywhere the first six picks or so. I think this year definitely feel a drop off at the second pick. And so that's where it probably comes in talking about a weaker draft. I do think that there's depth throughout, you know, you're looking at the first 15 or so players in a draft. I think there's for us Bills fans in Buffalo. I think there's some wide receivers that'll be pretty interesting in this draft. And there's some running backs that play the fantasy purposes that kind of next tier behind Love. There's some guys there as well.
I've peeped a few different rankings so far. You know, that stuff is starting to leak out now that the Super Bowl is over, Jeff. And I'm very much only seeing Mendoza as a first-round quarterback prospect, at least when you're talking about rankings, right? We're not into – I haven't dived in yet to any mock drafts because those are different exercises. Do you anticipate, I think Simpson from Alabama is the second quarterback I see usually out of the first round, at least ranking wise. Do you anticipate him or another quarterback or two getting into the first round as we get through the combine in the interviews? And we know that position always sort of gets elevated anyways, of course. It's quarterback. How do you think that'll shake out?
I think Simpson's the most interesting one to watch. He coaches kid, checks a lot of boxes in terms of size, athleticism, coming out of Alabama. So blue chip background there a little bit. But yeah, it seems to be kind of all over the board of where he's going to fall, if he's going to be late first or if he's going to fall into day two of the draft. Right now we're still watching Trinidad Chambliss from Ole Miss. He's trying to petition to be able to play more in college, which kind of tells me that maybe he didn't get the best information from the NFL in terms of going pro. But at the same time, we know it's a different landscape with NIL, and he's probably got $6 million sitting there from Ole Miss if he is able to return. I think seeing maybe a guy like Garrett Nussmeier or Carson Beck potentially might get into the conversation, but not in round one, I wouldn't think.
Jeff, your Mendoza comp is Matt Ryan. How do you decide on that? I know it's, you guys are a staff. Just wonder how the comps get decided upon and how firm is that?
Yeah, so I can speak to – so I handle the wide receivers. I've been 57 wide receivers, and so there's three of us handling this guy, primarily on that side, myself, Dave Kluge at Football Guys, and then Mike Kashuba. And we gave – Mike is newer to the project, helped out last year, and he did the quarterbacks and the tight ends. And so he did that Matt Ryan comp. We really – dig down as kind of positional experts, and I can speak to how I comp for wide receivers is I'm just really ideally looking at play style, ideally looking at college for the comps that I do for wide receivers and how a guy looks in college, less so maybe how his NFL career turned out.
Okay. So yeah, that's interesting. And that's not going to be intuitive maybe to everybody who reads this, you know, because when I see what George Pickens for Carnell Tate, I'm thinking of the guy I just watched blast off for Dallas more than the guy
what
from college.
What he was coming out, yeah, right.
Yeah, and he was more of a controversial prospect. I guess more off the field than that, but that's interesting. We love comps, don't we? I mean, as a community, comps are the best. And I don't know, like you're the one authoring the draft guide. I mean, they're fun. Are they pretty? Do you have an opinion about their merits comparisons? Like they're definitely fun to think about, but they can also maybe sometimes mislead.
Yeah, I think that's fair because just like you said, the interpretation on what it actually means and what you're going for, and the way that I view it is kind of play style, kind of in your mind's eye. To hear George Pickens, you can kind of envision the type of player that he is, what he's bringing, and wide receivers in particular. We know that there's like three or four different positions that's actually a wide receiver. So kind of trying to invoke immediately just from a name and get that play style, kind of paint the picture of what type of player you might be looking at here.
You mentioned, Jeff, that you were in charge of the receiver position, and that's I don't know how much
Bills
you know. So you know, like what we're you're aware of the wide receiver train and all the stuff here, Jeff. So let's get out of the way first. The guys the Bills won't have any shot at unless they try trade up dramatically into the top 15 or something. But what kind of class are we talking about here?
I think I would be very surprised outside of a very aggressive move if Mekhi Lemon, Carnell Tate, or Jordan Tyson are still on the board when the Bills are going to come up. Probably the guys that we're going to be looking at in the first round would be Casey Concepcion from Texas A&M, came from NC State, and then Denzel Boston from Washington. Kind of two very different receivers. Boston, I mean, the Keon Coleman comp isn't fair to Boston. I think Boston's a better player, but like that bigger receiver. Mm-hmm. that you would know the Bills took a chance on couple of years ago. And then Concepcion is more my comp for Concepcion, and this will paint with the Bills fan, Stephon Diggs, is where I went with him as a player that can really make an impact in the short intermediate areas, kind of have a lot of volume potentially in some of the schemes that we've seen in Buffalo.
You mentioned you think Boston's a better player and it's unfair to compare him to Coleman just because of his size. What, in your mind, differentiates him from a player like Coleman?
I think with Boston, you're looking at a player who's a little bit more experienced than Keon Coleman was coming out. Maybe a little bit different maturity level, but coming out of that Washington program, first couple of years in Washington, he sat behind Rome Odunze and Jalen McMillan and Jalen Polk, those guys that went to that national championship, and he's been an impact player the last couple of seasons. I do think there are probably some stylistic comparisons between Boston and Keon Coleman, especially that high end of Keon Coleman, where we've seen him be function as a returner. Boston's another one of those players, a bigger wide receiver that's been a punt returner, and ability to play outside. I think there's more refined game that we're looking at with Boston than probably what we've seen develop in Buffalo with Keon Coleman so far.
Right. So refined game would lead one to think like this is a player that can get separation one-on-one, whereas Coleman is pretty much just locked up.
Yep.
Jeff, you're a Bills fan and also a prospect, a scout here, basically. Do you think there's hope for Coleman?
I do think there's hope for Coleman. It seems to be more off the field than on the field that potentially is going bleeding into it. But it really kind of comes down to just the professionalism. And we know, I caught the conversation about the bet with kids. We know there's a 16-year-old kid.
You were not supposed to bring that up.
But there's maturity levels that come into it. And I think we probably all can reflect at some point in our life when we actually got it, or maybe we haven't gotten it yet. But just that difference, that leap that you make, and it doesn't seem like Coleman's quite made that leap in terms of what it takes to become professional. So if he were to do that, we know, I think the physical gifts are definitely there to deliver on his potential, but that we're talking about ifs, and sometimes when a guy gets some money and kind of things have worked out for them so far, for the most part, that leap doesn't necessarily happen in the way that it should.
Is a life lesson not worth $20 American, Bulldog? really? With Jeff Bell from Football Guys. Jeff, day two receivers. Not everybody can get who they want in round one. This is really where maybe the Bills deserve the most criticism. Not ignoring that Coleman technically is a day two pick, the first pick of the second day.
Yeah.
But, their successes have been on day three, and they're relatively modest. What kind of draft is this for wide receivers like 5 through 15?
Yeah, I think just to put it in context, when I did that, like you're talking about wide receivers, I would say wide receiver 6 is kind of where you start talking about that. And then through that range, it really is difficult to kind of rank and separate, because I think there are a lot of talented guys between that wide receiver 6, wide receiver 16 to 18 type range that we will see dot the day two. I definitely think that if the Bills don't go in round one with a receiver, and if it's not Concepcion or Boston, I really don't want them to go round one receiver. I do think there will be opportunities on day two to get an impact player for the rotation.
With Jeff Bell, so running backs, I know that wasn't your position when you guys built this at Football Guys, but I've got season premiere, if I may, of ADP chasing tonight, Davis Maddock, Pat Corain, Jacob Sanderson, and me. And Davis was tweeting about Jadarian Price, or he might have been on his whatever it is, his Substack or whatever that is, but how he was the number two running back at Notre Dame behind Jeremiah Love, the consensus one, top running back in the draft here. But, still he comes in third in your draft guide, Jadarian Price. That's an interesting one. And his comp, by the way, is C.J. Spiller, who was one of my favorite Bills. So what is the running back landscape? How about having two guys from one school in the top three?
Yeah, we've seen this. So we saw that last year with Ohio State, with having Trevion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins there. I think this year we got another one outside of Notre Dame with Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton there in that conversation. So it maybe is trending a little bit in college, as these guys are, obviously we know the NIL landscape, but an eye towards the pros, having a guy that you can split the backfield with isn't necessarily a bad thing there. I think Price really looking for explosion, and he falls into a tier. Obviously, we know Jeremiah Love, but when you're looking at, like I said, Catron Allen, Jadarian Price, Mike Washington Jr. from Arkansas, Singleton from Penn State, who had the foot injury at the Senior Bowl. You're having Jonah Coleman, Emmett Johnson. I think all of those guys, I said, six guys there that could be any of them could be the running back two out of this class. And so from a fantasy angle, that's what we like to hear. We like to hear, five, six, seven guys that we think could step in and have a big impact in the backfield.
How much, if at all, do you think how Ashton Gentry's rookie year went will impact teams this year drafting running backs? I mean, I've seen Jeremiah Love in the top 10 for sure. Just, dart throwing at this point. It's still so early in the process. Do you think Gentry and the Raiders having it be as turbulence too strong, but like it didn't smash, that's for sure.
It was bad.
Okay, that's another way to put it. It was bad. Does that make a team maybe want to slow down? Like, great, we're going to draft this talented running back, but we got to have some stuff in order in front of him, or a quarterback or something, because we're just going to be wasting, and we know running back shelf life is not long, so wasting a year of the best running back in the draft is maybe not that smart.
Yeah, I think when you look at Gentry, he did well in the passing game, and that was one big question that he had coming in, and he kind of profiled maybe a little bit different than what we expected, where I think a lot of, especially in fantasy, but the draft landscape, we're thinking, here's another Saquon Barkley, and it was a lot more like what we're seeing at Devin Achane or a player like that, where he can make an impact in the passing game, and that is a box that Love checks, and I think that's a box you have to check to be even in the conversation to go round one as a running back position. But Love, I think Love could be an impact player in the passing game. So I don't know that teams are going to necessarily pause on taking Love because of Gentry. And I do think that as you're seeing people come out with their top 50s, those types of things, we're seeing unanimously Love being listed as a top five position or any position player in the draft. And so he's got to be in that conversation. I don't know that the Gentry didn't quite get there for us for fantasy. I think for real football terms, I don't think teams were necessarily discouraged by what he put out of the field last year relative to the situation.
I was about to follow up. Maybe bad was too strong. It was a bad draft pick in fantasy, Gentry. Picking him at like 111.
It hurts you in fantasy at that redraft ADP especially really hurt you.
It bombed. Again, Bills fan, Jeff. Are you surprised by James Cook's success?
Actually, I loved James Cook in his draft. That was he was one of my favorite backs in that draft. And I think we're seeing the NFL kind of change and allow an explosive player like that, because the concern about him was the size. You're seeing a different archetype being able to have a big impact. And it's interesting too, because he was the passing back in Georgia, and we definitely do not utilize him enough at Buffalo in that role. I mean, way too often ends up being Ty Johnson, in my opinion, relative to the skill set that Cook has. I think the volume overall is a little bit surprising, but in terms of being the explosive back that we're seeing for Cook, that's been a revelation.
So you think that's there? You think that's in him? I've wondered. I mean, he seems like he's had the reputation for being somebody who could help in the passing game. And early in his career, he had some pretty famous drops. But you think, and I also will say this, Jeff, I think, like, when I think of running backs on teams that catch the ball a lot, Christian McCaffrey notwithstanding, I feel like it's a sign of weakness on a team, where here I've got an MVP quarterback, I want to get it down the field, maybe I don't have the guys for it, but I don't want Rich Gannon, I don't want Nix or somebody that's throwing the ball to the running back in the flat all the time. There's got to be a happy medium there, though.
I absolutely agree, and I think I shudder to mention the New England Patriots here, but I think it's interesting that with Trevion Henderson last year, the talk was that he was going to be the next James White, but then that didn't materialize, and looking at it, well, yeah, you have Tom Brady at quarterback, and you've got James White. So Brady is going to make the read, and Brady's not going to scramble. And you've got Drake May at quarterback. He's going to hold on to the ball, scramble, and those dump-offs aren't going to be as part of the game. And that's what we see a lot with Cook, where it's schemed up down the field, that wheel route that he always ends up dropping, that it feels like. But I do think that overall, when it comes to the Cook especially, getting some level of rhythm in the passing game, I think it can be really difficult if you kind of – you're getting the ball, getting the handoffs, and then here's a play out of the blue sending you downfield to catch the ball, as opposed to kind of establishing that in the game, and you're kind of starting to play and move with the flow of the game a little bit more.
Jeff, while we get the lay of the land from you today, how about tight end real quick? Has it not been true that the kind of the feeling that rookie tight ends just they need time and it's rare? We had Kincaid, and it was, you know, what we talked about that offseason was how rare it is for a tight end as a rookie to really give you stats, at least. But that's been blown up a little bit. Laporta and then Bowers and what McBride has been not as a rookie exactly.
Even Kincaid caught 74 balls as a rookie.
Right. Are we in a different place at that position?
I think we are, because teams have figured out how to use like a Jonnu Smith. It felt like forever. We, especially in fantasy, were like, hey, this guy's very intriguing. This guy's a plus athlete, but they could never figure it out because he's not a traditional inline blocker. And so what we've seen in Buffalo, we've seen across the league, is kind of more of that blending of the two tight end sets, having a tight end that's a little bit more dedicated, or having a sixth offensive lineman on the field that can kind of be that inline guy, and then treating that tight end like more like a slot receiver. We've really seen a lot of the three wide receiver, slot receiver sets disappearing out of the NFL from where it was a couple of years ago, where it was every single team was ran three wide receivers. I think that this is kind of the answer of something that we've been frustrated with the two high safeties and killing kind of the deep passing game. Is you put those two tight ends out there, you have one kind of serves as your slot receiver, and now all of a sudden you can run James Cook downhill into lighter defenses because you've got heavier fronts.
I should point out, too, that we had three tight ends this year as rookies who did really well. Tyler Warren, yeah. Harold Fannin, and then especially in the playoffs with Colston Loveland. So those Warren and Loveland were first-round picks, not in that order, and they both had fine rookie campaigns. Very good, Jeff. Well, your chirp about my situation at my Super Bowl party notwithstanding, I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I'm ready for the next one.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll look forward to doing it again, Jeff. Thank you.
Absolutely.
You're welcome. Jeff Bell, footballguys.com. The rookie draft guide is out at their website. It's downloadable, it's free, and it's excellent. 803-0550 for us. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. We'll be right back. This is WGR. USA women facing Italy in the Olympic quarterfinals. No score. About midway through the first period, U.S. with a heavy advantage in shots on goal, but they have not yet scored.
Were you tempted to say solved the Italian netminder?
No, I thought of something more cliche even than that. Yeah. Like just, but I'm happy with myself that I avoided, like, tickled the twine or one of those. Thank God.
Find the back of the net.
Thank God. I know. It's half the goals where announcers say the back of the net, the puck doesn't even make it to the back of the net. But that's, you can't say the net anymore. You have to say the back of the net, or else you're not cool.
Yeah, I guess.
Thank God I helped get us here. What is there to bet on right now?
I blame myself because you were ready to move on, and I had to tweak you about the netminder.
Football is over. It's NBA All-Star Weekend, if you want it. We have the Olympics. One, raise your hand if you're betting on the curling right here. Thank you. Mixed results so far. But if you're Sam Panayotovic, I don't know if you might, well, you might bet anything, but you might not have to mess around with this esoterica. You might just bet next year's NFL already. And I respect that.
I made a bet last night. I know we're going to talk about it, but it's funny. The thing I'm looking at right now, there's a market on who will be the next James Bond, and I'm ready to make a bet.
I have never seen a James Bond movie.
Well, that's not surprising. I'm not surprised by that one bit.
No, I've never seen, like, it's probably been on in a room I was in, like Dr. No or one of those. But, like, that was the first James Bond movie. I had a friend whose dad was into it.
Yeah.
But I never really watched it.
I'm also not.
Not surprised.
I don't know. It's just, it seems like something you'd like. I mean,
really?
Yeah. I don't know. Martinis and cool cars and like suits and glamour.
Some of that is me.
Yeah.
Murder. Don't forget murder.
Murder. Of course, there's murder. There's. But yeah, I don't know. It's like classy, sexy kind of like, I don't know. I don't know that I go all the way back, but I've seen some Connery Bond. I remember seeing Roger Moore in the theater. Maybe Man with the Golden Gun, I think, was him.
Okay.
I've seen Daniel Craig. I think has he been Bond, Sam? I'm pretty sure he has, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I can't believe you skipped over my favorite, Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, I think I've seen him too.
So what? Is there an opening? Is that what this is?
They have 15 guys on a list, and they have them all priced out. It's basically like looking at a conference title or a championship market, and the guy I'm looking at, his name is Theo James. He was in the show The Gentlemen. He was in Divergent. He's 18-1 right now, and I think that's a good bet.
I'm going to guess, is Idris Elba like the favorite for this?
I'm so glad you said that. I'm old enough to remember when Idris Elba was the favorite to play Bond, but that was like 5 years
ago.
We haven't had a Bond movie.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he's too old now. He's been aged out, I think. He's not even on the board.
Wow.
Well, what is this again? Then, like, whoever was it last is not interested anymore, or he's retired?
I think he just sort of aged out. I think Idris Elba's got to be pushing. He's 53 now. So, yeah, he's too old to be Bond. Bond's in that, like, 35 to 45 range for the most part.
Come on. Wasn't Daniel Craig close to 50 when he played Bond? He looked every bit of that age to me.
Maybe at the end. Daniel Craig right now is .. 57. The last one was about, 5 years ago. So he was an older Bond for sure.
I wouldn't rule out Elba, but if he's not listed, there must be a reason for that, I would think.
He's not listed. You know who is listed, though, and I would never bet? Tom Holland is 75-1. I would throw Tom Holland with one arm out the door. Like, that's how little Tom Holland is. He cannot be Bond.
He cannot be Bond.
Well, he can do wonders making short people look taller on film.
So. Any women on this list?
No.
A woman has no chance of being James Bond. That's completely out. Okay.
Do you really want to have this conversation? Mike?
What site are you on where you're just, right able to tell us how old these actors are?
I'm a former producer researcher, so it just takes me.
You know where to look.
6 seconds. If you want to know somebody else, I'll get you their age in like 6 seconds. Don't worry.
All right, I believe it.
I don't need to try you. I believe it as well. Yeah, no question. So what is this Bills bet you made last night? I wasn't really sure how to interpret the text you sent. I'm not sure if you sent the same thing to both of us or not. It looked like it was on a napkin or the back of a receipt, and I couldn't really make it out.
Yeah, so I'd rather explain it and have everybody weigh in. So my buddy's a Bears fan. He's in town from Chicago. And we got to talking about, like football as Chicago people do. And he was like, Caleb's going to win the MVP next year. And I'm like, I don't know. He goes, well, he should be the favorite. And I'm like, no, he shouldn't. And he said, yeah, he should. And then I said, well, luckily we can pull up the market. It's probably going to be Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. And he's like, those guys' time is done. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, this is how a Chicagoan thinks, the sea is parting for Caleb Williams. So we pull up the odds. Josh is favored, Lamar is second, and then Caleb is like 9th or 10th. He's about 15-1. And you can't exactly make a side bet on that. What are we going to bet? Is Caleb going to win the MVP or not? That's not a fair bet. So I said, well, we can do, if you want to bet Caleb, I'll bet Josh. We can do total touchdowns or more team wins. And he's like, oh, the Bears are definitely going to have more wins than the Bills. Done on the spot, okay. Handshake, $200.
I love a napkin bet. Those are the best. This your friend's name appears to be Bernard Goetz, by the way, from the signature. I'm not sure. I didn't know you knew him, but that's what it looks like. And your little initial signature is very much like mine. That's how I do initials, where I write my first and last initials and then circle it. And that's your move, too?
Yeah, well, I said initial it, and he goes, I don't initial, I got an autograph. So I'm like, all right, write your autograph down. Right. Like, yep. If it makes you feel better, go for it. But 2 weeks after I told you guys I'm not betting on the Bills, I already have $200 in the kitty. It's not even March yet.
I'm glad you said that because I was about to ask you if you didn't just say last week that you were off. You were going to take a break from the Bills.
Well,
that's all. Breaks over. Breaks over.
We have really rubbed off on you in maybe the worst way possible. You just can't. You can't help yourself.
So we don't. We have Super Bowl odds, I think, but we don't have win totals yet, I bet, right? Or do we?
They usually don't do those. In the past, they've done it after the draft, and then the schedule comes out. So, I mean, you might see some numbers right after the NFL draft, but generally, like, the schedule comes out shortly after the draft. Usually, like, April to May, you'll get the win totals. And
okay.
Yeah, they asked me the other day, like, would you have any win totals you're eyeing? And I said, well, we don't have any yet. But the team that I would bet over on this year would be Tennessee. I'm a huge Robert Saleh fan, and they brought in Brian Daboll to run the offense. I think coaching-wise, they're just in such a much better spot. And depending on how you feel about Cam Ward, you might be in or out. I'm kind of in the middle there. But they're going to have a win total of like 5.5 or 6, and I would bet that over right away.
Are they even maybe, like, if you really like it, they're going to be a long shot for that division? But that could be – that division has paid really well in certain years recently. Like, when Houston won the first time, they were coming off, what, like the second overall pick or whatever that was. So, I don't know. It depends on how you feel about the other teams. Sam, either your picks – just like, let's just sort of rip through this. Or who you think the favorites will be in each NFL division next year.
Well, I have the odds in front of me, so we can go down the line if you want.
All right, I'll just guess. How about that? Bills, Ravens, Jaguars.
Texans.
Wow.
What's that, Ben? What is that?
Plus one. It's like plus 160, plus 180, so right there.
All right.
L.A.?
Chargers are co-favored with the Chiefs.
Philadelphia has to be favored. Oh, NFC North is really good. I want to say Detroit.
Yep.
Okay. Then Tampa?
Tampa every year, plus 115.
Seattle.
Rams slightly over Seattle.
The Rams are favored over Seattle. What does Seattle have to do?
Win the Super Bowl again, maybe? I don't know. I don't think that's funny. And you know what's crazy? You just nailed every division except for one, so kudos to you. To win the Super Bowl, if you pull up that market at whatever book, they're all about the same prices. When you see a team, like the first team on the list is plus 950, and then the eighth team is 14-1, that's the book saying, we don't know. Like, we have no idea. we're going to put an aggregate price. We're going to put eight teams between 9 and 14, and you guys just pick who you want. Like, there is no clear-cut favorite for the first time in a long time.
I wonder if that Rams over Seattle is already the first sign. We talked a little bit about this, you know, the day after or 2 days after the Super Bowl, Sam, that Darnold, like, I'm going to be guilty of still sort of expecting him to blow up, even though he never did this year, right? He got through those games. He was incredible in the NFC title game. They win the Super Bowl, I mean, on the backs of their defense, largely, but still. And it's going to be a new season. Be like, yeah, I'm not sure I really trust him. Like, that is still going to stick to him, I think, with some fans, and I'm admitting I think I'm one of them.
He's also losing the brain trust of the offense. Kubiak's gone. Right. He's going to be the head coach of the Raiders, so that's something to account for. Defensively, we'll see. I mean, they do have a lot of cap room. That's the good thing. Like, they're not going to get, you know, pillaged in free agency or whatever like the Eagles did. I mean, the Eagles lost Josh Sweat, they lost Milton Williams, they lost one of their corners. Like, that just happens every year. When you win the Super Bowl, other teams want a part of that magic, and they want guys from that team. I don't think there's a lot of roster turnover per se. It will be interesting. I saw a story about, like, potentially Kenneth Walker not being back in town, which would be crazy to think, like, you win the MVP of the Super Bowl, and then you're not there the next year. That'd be wild. But, you know, there's a lot to like about that defense. And I don't think, I mean, of the 11 guys, they might bring back 9 of them. So that's where you start. And, I mean, that defense, I know everybody says the game, like, wasn't entertaining or it was boring or whatever. The defense just took the life out of New England. So if most of those guys are back, you have to put them near the top. And it's also, like, a lot of injuries happen in the regular season, Bulldog. I mean, if you look at Seattle's schedule next year, it's like, oh, that could be a tough game. That could be a tough game. Well, what if Stafford's hurt? That's 2 wins. You know, like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of injuries that happen at the quarterback position. And a lot of teams that make runs in the regular season, you often go back and look at their schedule, and it's either, oh, they played a backup quarterback or a team that fired the coach. Like, that happens a lot in the NFL.
How did you do on the game?
I did. On props, I was 3-1. I lost my MVP on Shahid, which they tried to get him involved early. He was never winning the MVP, though. And I won like $82 on Charlie Puth holding Brave for 8 seconds.
Well, $10 a second?
You'll always have that.
I told you guys, I was like, he is gonna take Brave to the house. And the number was 3.5. He held it for 8 seconds.
Yeah. And Rampart's got no action. Circle back on that. If it just happens, if we're in the same room or something and we're talking about how long the word Brave is going to be sung for, then all right, sure, here's a 20. But I'm not calling anybody to make that bet. I mean, I felt like you were probably right. The anthem bets seem like everybody's always right. You find out on Friday how the rehearsal went and, you know, just
act accordingly.
There, exactly. Exactly.
We talked on Friday at this time, and the over-under, well, no, I found out about the word Brave because I have a buddy who's a music exec. So, I mean, whatever, insider trading, so be it. But the anthem hadn't been rehearsed yet. And when we were on the show a week ago, the number was 203, 2:03. By the time we got to Saturday, the number was like 1:52. So the rehearsal clearly came out, and I think he finished 151. The Brave thing was like they a guy knew a guy who said Charlie's going to play really fast and then he's gonna just explode at the end on the last word, and he did. So you could have looked smart at your party, Mike, if you would have dropped that on somebody.
I might have said it or some facsimile of that, but no, I didn't actually win. But that's how I roll. I make a lot of predictions. The ones I bet on are often wrong. But I am betting Olympic curling. And we did talk about USA women's hockey, which is playing now. And they're up 1-0 after one, having outshot Italy. I believe I saw 20-3. And they dominated Canada. We talked to Joe also last week about that team. Like, they just look like a juggernaut. So I don't know if it's too late now, but they're probably a huge favorite now, right?
I would think.
The women, yeah, they are. I was going to ask you guys, let's see, women future prices. Oh, they have them off the board. I guess there's games going on right now.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, Bulldog, you might be privy to this. Is USA 2-1 to win the gold on the men's side? Is that a good bet?
2-1.
Yeah, I think that's worth a flyer. I mean, I think it would be surprising to some extent if they didn't get a look at it with Canada or someone else. I mean, to me, like, Finland doing what they did today to Sweden puts them back in the mix. Like, I think it's going to be pretty competitive. So I'm not assuming Canada and the U.S. make it, but 2-1 I think is pretty decent on the U.S. right now.
They wouldn't, if Canada plays the U.S., they wouldn't be 2-1, obviously. It'd be much smaller than that.
Right.
But I don't think Canada should be -110. I think it's less than 50% that they win. And that's really all it is. It's math. So Canada's -105 on the men's gold. USA 2-1. Sweden 8. Finland 14. We could probably stop there. I think I'm going to bet USA 2-1.
Good luck, Sam. Thanks for your time. What's new on the podcast?
We put up an old interview with Artie Lang, comedian from Howard Stern. Oh, we had to edit like half of it because it was so raunchy. But we did put it up on the Chicken Dinner YouTube and on the podcast feed.
I saw that and I forgot about it. I favorited it. How old is that?
That's 2016. And he tells a story about him and Norm MacDonald throwing $60,000 in the ocean. You got to listen to it.
Oh, my God. I saw Dirty Work in the theater. I never go to movies. I saw Dirty Work in the theater, let me just say.
Then you would appreciate the interview. They talk about going to Vegas for the Dirty Work tour, and they came back with no money. Artie and Norm were degenerate gamblers.
Norm MacDonald, Artie Lang, Jackie Mason, maybe Dirty Work. I haven't thought about that in a long time, but I'm here for it. Very good. Thank you, Sam. Enjoy your weekend.
You guys too. Go watch James Bond, Mike.
Ugh. It's too late. Isn't it? Aren't I getting enough mileage out of having never seen one at this point?
Yeah, at this point, you probably should just see that through.
People are so interested in me when I tell them I've never seen a James Bond movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's at least something you can say that maybe people will react to. instead of like, oh, I really liked Octopussy or something like that. I mean, just I don't know if I am better off reviewing. Well, I mean, there are more recent James Bond movies,
sure,
but I don't know.
I would say I don't think I'm a fan, but I've liked every one of the movies I've seen. Like they visually, they're pretty spectacular.
Okay. That's never really interested me. I mean, the movie I'm thinking of that I would call visually spectacular, I'm already going to make it worse for myself, even though it is an all-time, you know, it's a top 10 movie ever made probably. But Lawrence of Arabia, like that's visually, okay. That's sure. my idea right. of visually. Star Wars is not. Lawrence of Arabia God. Is
yeah, no.
visually spectacular.
Yeah, I just think that the settings for the Bond films, it's you know, it's Europe and it's the Mediterranean and it's hot. It's bikinis and it's cliffs and it's blue water and it's
love
it's,
all that.
It's beautiful.
Love all that.
Yeah.
Matt Verderam coming up at 4. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here, WGR.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
As a man, finding a truly great pair of pants can feel impossible. Some wrinkle the moment you sit down. Others look fine but don't travel well, don't move well, or completely lose their shape throughout the day. When you're flying, commuting, or packing light, most pants just aren't built for real life.
That's why there's Jack Archer. JackArcher.com makes the Jet Setter Tech Pant designed to be the one pair of pants you actually need. Comfortable enough for travel, polished enough for work, and versatile enough for wherever the day takes you. The Jet Setter Tech Pant is wrinkle-free, stain-resistant, and built for all-day comfort. With flexible stretch, customizable fit options, and thousands of five-star reviews, these are the pants you'll reach for every day.
Jack Archer, ready when you are. For a limited time, get 15% off your first order using code GETJACK at JackArcher.com. Again, that's promo code GETJACK at JackArcher.com for 15% off your first order.
Thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times? You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Get sweet deals at True North convenience stores when you join True Rewards. Save a dollar when you buy any two King or standard size candy bars. Get more Kit Kat Crunch, Milky Way Caramel, and more peanut M&Ms. Choose any of your chocolate favorites when you grab two King or standard size candy bars and save $1. Become a True Rewards member today and save on so much more. Download from the Apple app or Google Play Store for more details. True North convenience stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.